This is Canadian Wealth Wisdom by TriDelta Private Wealth. My name is Kyle Taylor, Wealth Advisor and Portfolio Manager with TriDelta. I am joined by Kevin Geiger, Principal and Managing Director with ICM Asset Management, to discuss investing in music royalties.
Thanks, Kyle. Great to be here.
Before we begin, it should be noted that this podcast is intended for general information only and not as specific investment advice. You should always speak to an investment professional to determine the appropriateness of any investment or investment strategy and how it relates to your specific situation. That said, the TriDelta team welcomes a conversation to learn more. Charlie Munger once said that micro is what we do and the macro is what we have to put up with. Well, investors have certainly had to grapple a lot with the macro over the prior year and couple of years. Whether it's tariffs, geopolitics, or central bank independence, investors have had much to consider when making decisions. But if there's one constant I always preach, it's that of diversification. And in 2026, investors may be looking for new ideas on how they can add investments uncorrelated with stocks and bonds. Enter music royalties. Kevin, can you share a little bit about what music royalties are?
Sure, Kyle. Thanks. At its core, a music royalty represents ownership of intellectual property that's created when a song is written and recorded. There are two primary components. First, the master recording, which is the actual sound file listeners hear when they press play. Second, which are publishing rights or composition, which are the underlying lyrics and musical structure of the song. When you invest in music royalties, you're acquiring one or both of these rights, and those rights generate income whenever music is consumed in any format.
So how is revenue generated from these royalties?
Revenue is generated every time music is used. Today, roughly 75% of global royalties come from streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, you name it. However, income also flows from radio airplay, digital downloads, physical sales, social media usage, and synchronization, which is when music is paired with film, television, advertising, commercials, gaming, anything like that. In essence, whenever music is played, performed, or licensed, the intellectual property produces cash flow for investors.
And I know music hasn't always been the most accessible of investments. Who has historically participated in this market, and what opportunities is ICM focusing on?
Yeah, great question. I mean, you know, there hasn't typically been a way for the everyday retail investor to get access to this. For decades, royalties were primarily owned by artists, songwriters, producers, labels, and publishers. The market was really relationship-driven and relatively opaque. What's changed that was streaming. Streaming introduced recurring transparent revenue streams, which allowed institutional investors to underwrite music more like other cash flowing assets. And so, you know, in the last couple of years, there has been a push from, you know, investment funds like us to get into this market. But typically the last decade or so has been pretty big institutional players.
So what makes an attractive deal for a music royalty that you would focus on?
Yeah, great question. We concentrate on transactions in the $5 to $10 million range. That positioning allows us to operate in a segment where we're not competing directly with major labels or billion-dollar investment funds. It enables us to construct diversification across genres, rights types, artist profiles, and vintage years as well. To date, we've completed 49 catalog acquisitions, covering over 6,200 songs across more than 500 artists. We prioritize catalogs with high streaming exposure, consistent recurring revenue, and enduring cultural relevance. Underwriting each opportunity through rigorous data analysis, which includes consumption trends, playlist activity, historical financials, and audience growth as well.
It's interesting because it actually seems like you were actually doing a lot to increase the efficiency of the market for music royalties. If only the big transactions typically get the most appetite, would you say that it provides a bit of a more of a mechanism for those smaller royalty owners who are looking to exit?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's a couple of smaller marketplaces out there as well. One of them is called Songvest, whereas it takes really small pieces of ownership that you can buy, and, you know, the everyday person can buy it on there. They're really, really small deals. It's really kind of one-off stuff. But yeah, the marketplace for those smaller to medium-sized deals typically hasn't been all that robust. So it's, yeah, you know, stepping into this space provides a bit more clarity on valuations, liquidity, and just generally opening up the marketplace.
Absolutely. And you mentioned streaming, Spotify, Apple Music. How has the impact of these streaming services had on the market for music royalties?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think we're all old enough to remember Napster way back in the day, and I think that guy's name was Sean Fanning. And I remember at that time, everybody thought music was dead, right? It was, you can get music for free or quote unquote free. But streaming really transformed music from a one-time purchase into a recurring consumption. Today, a song released decades ago can generate daily income. As subscription bases grow and platforms demonstrate pricing power, those recurring revenues become more and more predictable. That predictability is what supports long-term valuation frameworks for music catalogs.
And how long do these royalties last when you buy it?
Yeah, that this is something that most people don't know about the industry, is that when you buy these royalties, you own them for the life of the artist or the last remaining band member plus 70 years, 7-0. So we refer to them as 100-year assets. You know, just generally speaking, artists are, you assume, you know, kind of 30 years the average person's going to live, plus that 70 years afterwards. So they're really long tail enduring assets.
I mentioned some of the volatility that investors have had to put up with in terms of stocks and bonds, some of the more traditional investments that are out there. What are some of the primary benefits of investing in music?
Yeah, you know, at the macro level, the industry really continues to expand. Global audio streams grew 9.6% last year in 2025, rising from 4.7 trillion, that's with a T, trillion, to 5.1 trillion streams. Structurally, royalties offer low operating expenses, no capital expenditure once acquired, high margins, and durable cash flows. They've historically demonstrated really low correlation to traditional equity markets, making them pretty compelling from a diversification standpoint. Importantly, as well, as copyright protection lasts for the life of the artist, plus 70 years, like I mentioned, so this really makes it a long duration and legally protected asset.
So something that investors often struggle with is how to value something, whether it's Bitcoin, shares of NVIDIA, or what have you. How does someone go about valuing a music royalty?
Yeah, that's probably the most common question that we get. We build discounted cash flow models grounded in historical royalty data and trend analysis. We assess the age, volatility of the catalog, cultural staying power of the songs, types of rights owned, revenue concentration, geographic diversification. You know, it's a blend of quantitative modeling and qualitative judgment, and disciplined underwriting is essential.
And how prominent is music piracy, and does it impact the value of these investments? I know that was something that maybe was more commonplace 10 years ago, but how is it today?
Yeah, and like I mentioned, the whole Napster thing before, but piracy is not it's not really what it once was. Affordable subscription models and freemium tiers are widely available, so the incentive to pirate music has declined significantly. The convenience and accessibility of streaming have largely mitigated that risk. And you really, take a step back for a second, and for, $15 or $20 a month on Spotify or Apple, you get access to essentially every song on the planet. So the value is really there. And so piracy is really not a concern the way it once was.
And you're right. Having the free versions, the freemium, as you put it, is a, it's a convenience item as well, right? Like people, whether they're paying for it or not, it's just something that they have and they don't really think about getting rid of.
Yeah, and the other piece too is the playlists that you curate for yourself on here. They're very sticky, right? Nobody wants to be recreating playlists that they curated for themselves from 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And typically, when you're out walking your dog, you're going to the gym, you're doing your morning commute, you're not rebuilding your playlist and starting from scratch. You're just going to put one on play that's been sitting there for a while. And that leads, that really lends to how sticky music royalty revenue is because you have those consistent plays on those playlists from streaming.
Yeah, I didn't think about the playlist side of things, actually. That's interesting. What are some of the artists that is included in ICM's fund?
Yeah, like I said, we've got exposure to more than 500 artists. Anybody from, we've got Taylor Swift, music from Shawn Mendes, DMX, Jason Derulo, Five Finger Death Punch, the Lumineers, Alan Walker, Nipsey Hussle, Gordon Lightfoot, Janis Joplin. Again, over 500 artists in total. Importantly, though, we typically own portions of catalogs, which enhances diversification of the fund.
When we first met, I remember I subscribed to the playlist that you guys have available on Spotify with all the different artists, and I was interested because you mentioned Taylor Swift, and a lot of those are the originals. Now, I know a question that some people may have is, there's an ability for an artist like Taylor Swift did for re-recording some of those tracks. Does that play a role into the future revenues of the original songs?
Yeah, in a positive way, if you can believe it. You know, the part of the story that most people kind of overlooked from the Taylor Swift saga with Scooter Braun and her record label and the royalties is that Taylor still owned her portion of the masters, as well as in her early days, she was a songwriter on a lot of those songs as well. So she was still getting paid her portion of the masters, as well as the songwriting and the publishing credits. The piece that she was fighting for was the remaining part of the masters that was from her record label, Big Machine, which she actually has gotten back now. But when she re-recorded those, the interesting thing is that she got obviously owned a massive portion of the masters on the new recordings, but she also was the songwriter originally. So when she re-records those songs, she's getting paid as the songwriter on those new songs. So if you really think about it, she's kind of quadruple dipping because she's got the songwriting credits from the old music and the new music, and she's got her masters from the old and the new music. So she made out very well in this scenario. On a go-forward basis, I think it's going to be, it already is, you know, we've really only seen this one time in history that somebody has re-recorded music like that, but you can bet that on a go-forward basis, when record labels are signing artists, that's probably a clause that's going to be in there at this point.
And I mean, not everyone's Taylor Swift either, so people don't necessarily have that kind of power.
Yeah, that's exactly it. She's a once-in-a-generational talent, so it's, yeah, you're bang on.
How did ICM actually begin in the music space? Because ICM, people typically think real estate.
Yeah, good question. So it, you know, if you look the full name of the ICM Crescendo Music Royalty Fund, Crescendo is a separate entity. So the couple of guys who own and run Crescendo, Alex and Reese. Alex is based out of Houston. Reese is based out of Calgary. They actually met Dave, who's the president of ICM and the PM of the Music Fund. They met him at an AGM for a tech company in Calgary. And the Crescendo team was already looking into the space. They didn't have the capital to deploy into the space. And so there was kind of this really perfect marriage where you had the data analytics team ready to go. And then ICM stepped in as the investment fund manager, portfolio manager, you know, capital raising, sales team distribution, all that sort of stuff. So that is the relationship currently and on a go-forward basis, is that they're the analytical team behind the scenes and ICM is doing the investment fund management. And that's, it's been phenomenal.
And how has the fund grown since 2020 when it first started up?
Well, I've been in this industry for almost 25 years, and I would say this is my biggest success story I've been a part of. We launched this fund, you know, 5.5 years ago with $0, you know, a little bit of seed capital, and that was it. And, you know, we ended at the end of 2025 over $358 million in AUM. So a phenomenal growth story. Thanks to all of our clients, Kyle, everybody on the other side of the desk. I mean, it was a really ground up game trying to tell this story. It's a unique asset class. It's something very new to the market. Like I mentioned earlier, that, you know, there just wasn't a lot of retail access to this. So it's, the fund has grown phenomenally.
And what have the returns been?
So 2025, last year, the fund did 11.68%. 5-year annualized is 11.83, and since inception, the fund's generated 11.15% annualized returns. And those returns just reflect disciplined portfolio construction and the structural growth of the streaming ecosystem.
And those returns are obviously fantastic. I think what's even more apparent is just the fact that the fund probably would have done 11% regardless of what stocks or bonds did in the public side. So I think that really speaks to some of the diversification benefits there. I want to thank you again for joining me, Kevin. That concludes this recording of Canadian Wealth Wisdom, addressing opportunities for diversification in Canadian investment portfolios. Should any of our listeners be looking for more information on investing in music royalties, a Tridelta advisor, myself, or Kevin would be happy to speak with you. Thank you.